This podcast is brought to you by Motorola.
D U D E. Dude. Okay. Send to entire address book. Sending. Sent. Excellent. That's gnarly, dude. Tubular.
Hi, my name is Rod Adams. This is show number one of The Atomic Show, one of many great podcasts hosted by the Podcast Network. My co-host is Shane Brown. We're a couple of geeks with a passion for atomic energy and its benefits. We plan to take advantage of new media models to share our passion with you. This is going to be a participatory show with an associated blog where you can find show notes and leave comments. We look forward to our weekly visits to your computer or portable media device. Let me see if I can get the levels adjusted a little bit. All right.
My faith in Apple hardware and software is going up exponentially.
See, my faith in following procedures is going up exponentially. That's good for a nuke, you know.
Procedures are important.
Got to love those procedures. All right.
Unfortunately, we don't have nearly enough of them in software engineering, so that may very well explain part of the problem why my stress levels are so high.
Well, if you had them in software engineering, you don't have the people that would follow them anyway, so what difference would it make?
Stupidity should hurt.
Stupidity often does hurt.
Yeah, the trouble is that it's usually a binary situation where it kills them off before they can teach the lesson to their descendants.
Well, that's why they have the things called the Darwin Awards.
This is true. So, try number four.
Let's start chatting about nuclear power, more atomic energy, or whatever the heck we want to talk about here.
Having made the attempts, we should go ahead and do that. I agree. So, we were looking at, so should we introduce ourselves, or have we done that enough in the previous three tries that will not be there?
Well, we've introduced ourselves to ourselves, but I don't think we've introduced ourselves to any audiences. So,
okay.
With that being said, let's talk about why the heck I'm here. My name is Rod Adams. I'm a nuclear geek. I've spent the last 25 years or so involved in one form or another with the nuclear energy and energy information, but I've never even been employed by the nuclear industry. Nuclear submarine officer by training and a training investigator by current occupation.
All right. Well, for my half of it, I was going to say nuclear geek, but you obviously have me outgunned on that one, so I'll just say nuclear enthusiast and space geek / computer geek. And my interest in the technology goes back about 15 years when I was just in high school and started reading all this neat stuff about this technology that everyone seemed to hate. And ever since then, it has boggled me as to how people can consider this technology, which is, in my mind, the only sole true follow-on technology to fossil fuel, from actually going ahead with the promise that was originally laid out in the plans of the 40s and 50s. So by training, I'm an aerospace engineer, and by trade, I am a computer programmer, which was the origin of the software engineering gripes earlier in the conversation.
So, Shane, would you consider yourself a contrarian then, having been intrigued initially by a technology that nobody else likes?
I often wonder about my sanity when I hear everyone else saying all these incredibly negative things about the technology, and yet, for instance, one of the topics that you mentioned in your Google Alerts summary was this discussion of reprocessing as a potential way of solving the quote-unquote waste backlog. And there has never, to my mind, been a demonstrated instance of any of the reprocessed material diverted for anything other than peaceful, safe nuclear energy production. And yet people behave as though this were a given and it were absolutely certain that it was going to happen every time you reprocess. So the technology is of the devil.
Well, here's a question for you. Does it make any sense at all for people to be really worried about the diversion of reprocessing materials in a country or countries where the nations already have fully enriched weapons-grade materials in many other programs?
And for them to use that material and provide any additional safeguards anyone could care to ask for would be trivial, as most of the technology and infrastructure is already in place. No, it doesn't. It does not make any sense at all. Except that, well, in the federal government, logic does not often apply.
Spoken like a true federal government employee.
Well, it's my trade. It's not my passion.
Everybody needs to make a living now and again.
This is true. And when the money is as easy as it comes from the government, you just smile and go to work and try not to get demoralized. The trouble is there are way too many people who lost that argument with themselves and long since became demoralized and are among the most cynical, contrary people, and contrary in the negative sense, not in the sense of someone who wants to change things, someone who has resigned themselves to the fate that human laws have laid out.
You know, it's interesting. I feel the same thing in my day job. I am probably one of the most optimistic and positive people I know, mainly because I believe that people can change. People can make a difference. People can look around and see things that are wrong and persuasively, forcefully, write point papers and write opinion pieces and try to get people to change their minds, try to stop some of the insanity. It does work.
The trouble is that, especially in regards to changing people's minds about nuclear power, for every 2 or 3 hours of patient explanation and arithmetic arguments that we make, all it takes is some, let's say, person who is not used to thinking rationally about nuclear energy or about most other matters where there's a potential for harm. All it takes is one of them saying, what about Chernobyl? What about Three Mile Island? And then it completely reboots the argument and we have to start from scratch. It's easy to get demoralized when that's the case.
But you know, it's interesting. I personally like it to get involved in conversations with people and discuss issues like the fact that everyone can name the two accidents that have occurred in the last 25 years in a nuclear business, but very few people can name the coal mine accident that happened last week. And I can say
exactly.
That almost any week.
Absolutely. And that goes double for natural gas explosions. I mean, 5 or 10 years ago here in New Mexico, there was a family of four who were camping out near a pipeline, and they were just out minding their own business. Pipeline exploded out of the middle of nowhere. By the time the authorities got there, there were only two of the family still breathing, and they were in the water to cool their burns, and they didn't survive. Four
now,
people
is that,
burned
to death. Explosion that occurred near Carlsbad?
Yes, it was.
Okay. I'm going to gently correct you. I believe there were 12 people in that family. And as you eloquently stated, there were no survivors. And these people were out camping out in the middle of nowhere. I think there was a gas pipeline in the area, and the gas pipeline had a leak.
Mm-hmm. And their campfire set it off.
Exactly. The gas accumulated underneath an overpass or something to that effect.
Yep. So I had forgotten about the additional 8 fatalities in that. Makes it literally 3 times worse. And yet, that made front page news for a day and probably column 30 news in the back of the paper for a couple weeks talking about the legal ramifications and the reparations made by the natural gas company. But I'll tell you right now, I went down to Roswell on a camping slash diving trip back in August. And I was expecting to roll into a town that was pretty sleepy. And the town is actually booming. It has got money coming out of the ears. And it's obvious where that money comes from. And it's not the dairy industry down there.
Are they dealing
with gas? It's the natural
gas.
Oh, yes. That is one of the primary production fields in New Mexico. That field, and also up toward Farmington at the other corner of the state, is also a very, very heavy natural gas and very, very heavily invested natural gas production center. Between the that's the corner of the Permian Basin that extends into Texas towards Odessa at the southeastern corner of the state, and then the northwestern corner of the state's the big producer near Farmington. And as you drive up there, you see wells flaring, you see pipeline terminals, you see many, many, many instances of many millions of dollars of infrastructure. And yet people live next to these with absolutely nary a complaint. There's a few complaints that were covered in National Geographic a few months ago, where there was one lady who was complaining about her water turning green, and rightly so, because of the enhanced recovery techniques that the natural gas company was using in Wyoming. And they really had no plans on altering their approach, even though it was ruining the well water for many dozens of homeowners and doing who knows what to the chemistry of it.
So what do you think the people who are making big money in natural gas would feel if a large number of nuclear plants started being built and coming online and reducing the demand for natural gas?
Well, that brings us to the second of the stories with the Gazprom development, saying that they want to invest in nuclear power to free up natural gas for export abroad so they can make even more money. So that I would consider that the enlightened opinion. And the contrarian opinion is obviously the one they're going to today, with many, many, many examples, as pointed out by you, of all the money where the money flows. It's obvious that the natural gas companies have everything to lose and nothing to gain if they cannot keep people from casting about looking for an alternative that would work. And this time when we have such high gas prices, and there's not really a sign I can think of that they would go down. I mean, the only thing I could think of that would bring the natural gas cost down would be to increase production massively, or to put in LNG terminals and bring in, and there's no real economic way I can see that LNG terminals would make a real difference, and they would talk about a juicy terrorist target.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Near my house on the Chesapeake Bay, we happen to have a fairly unique situation. If you go down to a state park called Calvert Cliffs and take the hike down to the beach, you can, in fact, see a working natural LNG terminal and a working nuclear power plant in the same field of view.
Interesting. So
and the natural gas receiving terminal is called Cove Point, and the power plant is called Calvert Cliffs.
So how long has the LNG terminal been there?
Actually, the LNG terminal was built back in the 70s. It was laid up and not used up until about 2 to 3 years ago. I believe it became active again. I believe it's owned by Williams Energy. But for
not
an
surprising.
Awful long time, it simply was not economical to operate.
But it certainly becomes economical to operate with $15 per million BTU gas now, doesn't it?
Well, it only is economical to operate because there is a huge discrepancy in gas prices throughout the world. The reason that LNG is possible or has a potential for moving around the world is that in some places there are stranded natural gas that is available for less than a dollar per million BTU.
So what do you think about the gas-to-liquid schemes that the natural gas companies are pushing for dealing with that stranded gas to avoid having to put in the pipeline?
And at this point in the recording, we had a technical glitch. Apparently my old Mac doesn't have a fast enough hard drive to write and record at the same time, and we lost the rest of the conversation. But anyway, we are looking forward to coming to you on a regular basis, probably weekly, and talking about atomic energy. And of course, as you recognized in this show, it's hard to talk about atomic energy without talking about other forms of energy. So you learn about coal, oil, gas, wind, solar, biomass, all those kinds of things will be talked about during the course of our conversations. Looking forward to talking to you next week. Bye now.
This podcast is brought to you by Motorola.
Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for... excuse me, text message. Dude. Ha ha. Good work.